भूयताम् ओ भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैस्थिति। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकी नन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः। ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्य मनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूप कदा मह्यं तदाति स्वपदान्तिकं। वन्देहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतापदकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां साग्रजातां सहगणारघुनाथान्वितं तां सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितां च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिन्धु दीनबन्धो जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिकान्त राधाकान्त नमोऽस्तु ते। सप्तकाञ्चन गौराङ्गी राधे वृन्दावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वाञ्छाकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्य एव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे।
मनु अद्वैत ध्रुव महाराज नंबर 15 ऑनवर्ड्स। इन दिस चैप्टर व्हेन ध्रुव महाराज वाज किलिंग द यक्षस इंडिस्क्रिमिनेटली ऑल्दो ओनली वन यक्षा हैड एक्चुअली किल्ड हिज ब्रदर उत्तम। When Dhruva Maharaj started killing so many yakshas, at that time Swayambhu Manu, the grandfather of Dhruva Maharaj, he comes to pacify Dhruva Maharaj, he comes to advise him to stop killing the yakshas. So Swayambhu Manu, he starts giving instructions in the 7th verse, and he speaks to Dhruva Maharaj from various angles of vision. From various angles he tries to convince Dhruva Maharaj to stop killing the yakshas. Initially he mentioned that first he said that excessive anger is the path leading to hell. It is not good to become unnecessarily angry or excessively angry, because it is a path to hellish life. And then he mentioned that you are killing the yakshas, but your killing is not approved by the authority. Just like Krishna in the 2nd chapter mentioned that soul cannot be killed, soul cannot be killed by any of the weapons. But that does not mean that we can kill anybody, because any soul cannot be killed. No, you want to kill a person's body, only a person needs an authority. The second reason that Swayambhu Manu mentioned is that your killing is not approved by the authority. And then thirdly he said that your killing yakshas will actually bring bad name to our family. Basically mentioned that your action is not defeating our family, your action is not defeating our family in which great people come who know the principles of religion and irreligion. That stands by killing the yakshas, it's not defeating our family, in other words that it will actually bring bad name to our family. And then the fourth reason he mentioned is that I agree that because of your affection towards your brother Uttama, you are killing the yakshas. But then you are killing so many yakshas for the mistake of one yaksha. This is the fourth reason he mentioned. And then from verse number 10 to 14, 10 to 14, he speaks from Vaishnava point of view. So far he spoke about from a Kshatriya point of view. He spoke according to the codes of Dharma, that how it is not approved by the authorities, and it will bring bad name to the family. And from the point of view of excessive anger or becoming unnecessarily angry. And especially from 11th to 14th verse, or 10th to 14th verse, especially speaks from Vaishnava point of view. Then he may, in the 10th verse he says that Nayam Margo hi sadhunam Rishikeshanu Vartinam Yad Atmanam Paragrahya Pasuvad Bhuta Vaishasam. So those who are devotees of Krishna, Rishikeshanu Vartinam, they do not act on the bodily platform. Especially saintly people, or the saintly people means devotees of Lord Krishna, Rishikeshanu Vartina. And they should not act on the bodily platform. They do not act on an animalistic platform. Animalistic platform means considering somebody as an enemy, considering somebody as a friend. Well, this person is harming my body, so therefore I will kill him. So this is especially forbidden by saintly persons who follow the path of devotional service of the Supreme Personality of God. He is trying to remind that you are actually a devotee of the Lord, so therefore you are not supposed to act on the bodily platform or on the animalistic platform, thinking one person to be a friend or another person to be an enemy, and then killing the bodies of another person. And then he mentioned that he reminds that actually you are such a great devotee that you are already destined to go to the spiritual world. You are already destined to go to the Vaikuntha, which is very difficult to obtain. He uses the word Aradhyapa Duraradhyam Vishnu Sat Paramam Padam. You are already destined to go to the spiritual world, which is very difficult to attain. Then why are you actually acting in this way? So he uses the word Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena Bhava Vasam Harin Bhavan. Means like those who are destined to go to the spiritual world, they see how Krishna is situated in every living entity's heart. Bhuta Vasam Harin Bhavan. And in this way, Sarva Bhutatma Bhavena, in this way they worship the Supreme Lord by seeing that how the Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart. And so therefore, in a sense, what he is trying to say is that you are already destined to go to the spiritual world, and those who are going to the spiritual world, they see every living entity as a temple of the Lord. Every body as a temple of the Lord. They see the presence of the Lord in every living entity's heart. So therefore, it's not actually unnecessarily killed. In that way, he's mentioning, from Vaishnava point of view, he's mentioning this. And then he mentions that, actually, you are such a great devotee of the Lord, the Supreme Lord is always thinking of you. Because you are always thinking of the Supreme Lord, the Lord is also always thinking of you. And not only that, you are a recognized devotee by all other, by so many great devotees of the Lord. And therefore, your actions, people consider your, people take lessons from your actions. So therefore, your actions have to be exemplary. So therefore, you should not antagonize this. This is the third point he mentions from the point of view, Vaishnava point of view. Tattvam harer anudhyatas tat pumsam api sammataha. So Prabhupada Vishnu Chakotakur says that because you are thinking of the Lord always, the Lord is always thinking of you. That's how Prabhupada translates. And then he says that tat pumsam api sammataha. That means like you are a recognized devotee by so many great devotees of the Lord. So therefore, you should have exemplary behavior, and but the kind of behavior you are exhibiting now, it is not befitting a person who is actually a great devotee of the Lord. So then he mentions in the 13th verse, what should be the conduct of a devotee by which the Lord is pleased? What is the conduct of a devotee by which the Lord is pleased? So then he mentions the conduct of a devotee towards the superiors, inferiors, and with the equals. Like similar to the words spoken by Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj. Gunadikan mudam lakshe anukrosa gunam gunadamat maitrim samana tanvike na tapir abhibhuyat. So there Narada Muni says that if you have this kind of behavior, if you gunadikan mudam lakshet, when you see somebody who has better qualities than you, then one should become happy. Mudam lakshet. Anukrosha gunadamat. When you see somebody inferior, that one should be compassionate instead of trying to exploit that person. And when you see somebody with an equal, one should try to maitrim samana tanvichin, one should try to have friendship instead of trying to compete with the other person. And by this, na tapir abhibhuyate, one becomes freed from the misery from other living entities, or one becomes freed from the different miseries. So similar verses here, Swami Muni is saying, what should be the conduct of the devotee? Towards the superiors, one should be titikshaya, tolerant. And towards the inferiors, one should be merciful. And towards the equals, one should be friendly, maitreya. And one should have samatvenika sarvatma. Like one should be equal to everyone. As Prabhupada says, that means like one should consider others' happiness to be one's own happiness, and one should consider others' distress to be one's own distress. And by this conduct, the Supreme Lord will be pleased. So then in the 14th verse he says, Samprasanne Bhagavati, when the Lord is pleased, what is the result of pleasing the Lord? Purusha Prakritair Gunai. One becomes freed from the grass and subtle material condition. One becomes liberated from grass and subtle material condition. Vimukto Jiva Nirmukto Brahma Nirvanam Richati. a person attains unlimited spiritual bliss, Brahma Nirvanam Vishyati. So in this way, it is the 14th verse, Swayambhu Manu speaks from the Vaishnava point of view. So now, from the 15th verse onwards, Swayambhu Manu speaks from philosophical point of view, from 15th to 24th verse. In 10 verses, he speaks from philosophical point of view. Because Krishna Chaitanya says that Swayambhu Manu sees that Dhruva Maharaj is still not satisfied. So therefore he speaks from philosophical point of view, from in 10 verses from 15th to 24th. So this is 15th verse. Bhutair panchavirarabdair yoshit purusha evahi tayor vyavayat sambhutir yoshit purusha yoriha.
The creation of the material world begins with the five elements, and thus everything including the body of a man or a woman is created of these elements. But the sexual life of man and woman, the number of men and women in this material world is further increased.
Prabhupada writes in the purport that when Swayambhu Manu saw that Dhruva Maharaj understood the philosophy of Vaishnavism but still not satisfied because of the brother's death, he gave him an explanation of how this material body is created by the five elements of material nature. Our Vishnu Chakravartakar explains in 10 verses, Swayambhu Manu explains the nature of things, or he explained the nature of things in the sense like who is the killer and who is being killed. So 10 verses he speaks from how the nature of how the world is acting, who is the ultimate cause, and he speaks from a philosophical point of view. The previously he spoke from the point of view of a Vaishnava behavior, what to be the behavior of a Vaishnava in 5 verses. And before that he spoke from the point of view of the course of conduct of a Kshatriya, and he spoke from the point of view of how this behavior is not defeating a person who comes from our family, who know the principles of religion and irreligion. So here he says, Bhutair Panchabir Arabdair Yoshit Purusa Evahi. So different bodies which we see, both men and women, the bodies are made of the five elements, and from the interaction of the different bodies of men and women, further bodies appear. So Prabhupada writes here in the purport that Prabhupada says that one should not be disturbed by the waves of material nature in this process. Dhruva Maharaj is indirectly advised not to be afflicted by the death of his brother because our relationship with the body is completely material. The real self, spirit soul, is never annihilated or killed by anyone. So, of course, in the purport, many times like Prabhupada goes ahead of the verses. In the particular verse, Swayambhu Manu just says that the bodies are made of the male and female bodies are made of the five elements, and the male and female bodies combine to produce more bodies. And then in the next verse he will say that maintenance and destruction of the bodies, they also happen by the through the agency of the three modes. So in this verse what he says is that the creation of the body, how the creation of the different bodies takes place. Creation of the bodies takes place by the combination of the five elements. And then those bodies combine to produce more bodies. And the next verse we will talk about how the maintenance and destruction of the bodies, how they take place. So, and then we will say ultimately all these take place by the superintendence of the Supreme Lord, through the Maya potency of the Lord. So Prabhupada actually goes ahead of the verses and gives in the purport itself. He says, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti Puyatasa Characharam. only by Krishna's superintendence everything is actually going on. So Swamimuni tells this few verses later, but Prabhupada mentions that ahead in this purport itself. So this verse Swamimuni talks about how the creation of the body is taking place. And the 16th verse he talks about how the maintenance and destruction of the bodies, they also take place in the same way as the creation of the body, by the interaction of the three gunas. 16th verse. Evam pravartate sarva siti samyama evacha gunavyatikara rajan mayaya paramatmanah.
Not the three modes of material nature, but creation, maintenance and annihilation takes place.
So eva means just like the creation of the body is taking place, similarly sthiti samyama eva cha, evam pravartate sarga, just like the creation, as the creation of the body takes place in this way, similarly maintenance, sthiti and destruction, they also take place by guna vyatikarat, by the interaction of the three modes. But through the mayaya, through the maya potency of the Lord, mayaya paramatmanah, through the maya potency of the paramatma or the supreme Lord. So Prabhupada in the purport, he talks about how creation takes place by the influence of prajogun, maintenance takes place by the mode of goodness, and the depression takes place in the mode of passion. And then he says that we can see that those who are situated in the mode of goodness live longer than those who are situated in tamogun or rajogun. And so the proof is that those who are in the mode of goodness, they were elevated to the heavenly planet. And the heavenly planet, the lifespan of the heavenly planet is actually longer than situated in the mode of goodness, they live longer. And then he mentions that those who are situated in Shuddha Sattva, they go to the spiritual world where there is eternal life. So he also quotes this verse, Urdvam Gacchanti Sattvastha Madhye Tishtanti Rajasa Yadanya Gunavrittistha Adho Gacchanti Kamasa. Then in the 17th verse, Swayambhumanu says, the creation, so far he has explained, creation, maintenance and destruction of the body take place through the interaction of the three gunas and through the maya potency of the Lord. So now in the 17th verse, he is explicitly mentioning that the Supreme Lord is the indirect cause or the remote cause of everything. Is a remote cause or the indirect cause of creation, maintenance and annihilation. And then he explains this concept, with an example. He says that it may appear that material nature is the cause of creation, maintenance and destruction. Just like it may appear that iron is actually, a piece of iron is moving on its own. But actually, the iron is moving because of the influence of the magnet. When you move the magnet, the iron is moving. But it may appear that iron is moving on its own. So it may appear that material nature is actually causing creation, maintenance and destruction. But actually the Supreme Lord is the remote cause, the indirect cause of everything. He is actually, by his superintendence, the material nature is acting. So that's what he explains in the 17th verse. Nimitta matram tatrasin nirguna purusarsabaha vyakta vyaktam idam vishvam yatra brahmati lohavat.
For uncontaminated by the material mode of nature, is the remote cause of the creation of this material cosmic manifestation. Then he gives the input of many other causes and effects are produced. And thus the whole universe moves, just as iron moves by the integrated force of magnet.
So here in the purport, Prabhupada talks about, he gives the example of a pot and a potter. So you see that this concept of immediate cause and the remote cause. Just like, for example, for drinking water, the immediate cause is the water tap. But the remote cause is, you can say, the pond or the river. And for example, for the milk, the immediate cause is the milkman. But the remote cause is the cow. The immediate cause of the pot is the wheel or the earth. So the remote cause is the potter. The second example, Kaviraj Goswami says that thinking the material nature to be the ultimate cause, it is like thinking that the nipples in the neck of a goat to be the cause of milk. The nipples in the neck of a goat, it appears like the nipples, the other portion of the body of the goat. It may appear that your milk, maybe if you press that, milk will come. But if you press the nipples in the neck of a goat, you won't get milk. Similarly, it appears that material nature is the ultimate cause, but actually material nature is not the ultimate cause. So Prabhupada says, the potter's wheel rotates and several varieties of earthen pots come out. There are many causes for the earthen pots, but the original cause is the potter, who sets the force on the wheel. Even the first verse of the Bhagavatam, Janmadyasi Yato Anvayat Itaratasya. So Vishnu Chakravarti gives in the first explanation, he mentions that Anvayat Itaratasya, that means, he says that Anvayat Itarata means Lord is the material cause or the immediate cause, and the word Cha means the Lord is the remote cause or the efficient cause. So he says that Anvayat Itaratasya, it refers to how the Supreme Lord is both the material cause as well as the remote cause, or another word which is used sometimes is like the efficient cause. That is like another Shastri quotation for saying that the Supreme Lord is the immediate cause as well as the remote cause. Anvayat Itaratasya. Next verse.
सकलविदं भगवान् कालशक्त्या गुणप्रवाहेण विभक्तवीर्य करोत्यकर्तैव निहन्त्यसन्ता चेष्टा विभुम्नः खलु दुर्विभाव्य. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, by His inconceivable, supreme, endless time, causes the interaction of the three modes of material nature, and thus varieties of energy become manifest. It appears that he is acting, but he is not the actor. He is killing, but he is not the killer. Thus, it is understood that only by his inconceivable power is everything happening.
So, in this particular verse, Swayambhu Manu says, he explains how in the previous verse, he has explained that how the Supreme Lord is the remote cause of everything, creation, maintenance and destruction. Now in this verse he explains how the Supreme Lord is the doer as well as the non-doer. Karot, Akarta. Karoti and Akarta. Niganti and Ahanta. He is the killer as well as the person who does not kill. So, how the Supreme Lord can be the doer as well as the non-doer? So, he says, Sa kalu idam bhagavan kala shaktya guna pravagena vibhakta virya. the Supreme Lord is a doer, through his energies of Kala, Guna, the three modes of material nature, through his energies of Kala, Karma, Kala, the three modes, and also the Jiva Shakti, you can say, the living entity. So the Supreme Lord is a doer through his energy, because all these Kala, Guna and the living entity, all are his energy. But how can we say the Supreme Lord is a non-doer? He is a non-doer because these energies of Kala, Guna and the living entity, they are not his Swarupa Shakti. They are his separated energy. So in that way he is actually the non-doer. And then he explains in the last line, Chesta Vibhumna Kalu Durvi Bhavya. And Chesta Vibhumna Kalu Durvi Bhavya means, actually one may wonder, how can somebody be the doer and non-doer? And that, how can the Supreme Lord simultaneously be doer and non-doer? That is possible by the inconceivable potency of the Lord. Because the Lord has inconceivable potency, Durvi Bhavya. He has inconceivable potency because he is a very powerful Lord, Vibhumna. Chesta Vibhumna means of the Lord. Prabhupada gives the word to word translation, but Vibhumna also means he's a powerful Lord. Because he's a powerful Lord, he has got inconceivable potency, Durvi Bhavya. So therefore, he can be the doer as well as the non-doer. He can be the killer as well as the non-killer. And how is the doer and non-doer? He is a doer through his energy. And he is a non-doer because these energies are not his Swarupa Shakti. So Prabhupada in the purport, in the first paragraph, Prabhupada explains how Krishna is a doer of everything we see in the material world, such as killing or punishing your brother. So Prabhupada says that the word Durvi Bhavya means inconceivable tiny brain, and Vibhakta Virya means divided in ways, varieties of potency. So he gives an example. Well, government or a state is always supposed to be merciful. But sometimes, in order to keep law and order, the government employs its police force and thus punishment is meted out to the rebellious citizens. So when the punishment is given to the rebellious citizens, government is only doing. In that time, government is a doer. But still, government is a non-doer because government is not doing personally. It is doing out through its agent, through the police force. That is a non-doer. So similarly, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always merciful and full of transcendental qualities. But certain living entities, they forget the relationship and they become rebellious. In order to correct them, the Supreme Lord engages his material energy to punish them. As a result of their endeavor, they are involved in varieties of material interaction. And then Prabhupada also explains how Krishna is a non-doer. So he says that it is incorrect to argue, however, that because energy issues from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the actor. Because the government is actually employing the police force, we can say the government is the doer. But still, it is incorrect to say that he is the actor. Because the reason is that because government is completely aloof from that. When the Supreme Lord, he carries out all these activities through the material energy, but he is completely aloof from it. And that is indicated by the word Nimitta Matram in the previous verse. Nimitta Matram means the remote cause. In the previous verse, the word Nimitta Matram indicates the Supreme Lord is completely aloof from the action and reaction of the material world. So that is why the word inconceivable has been used, how the Supreme Lord is doer as well as non-doer. And then he explains that it is not possible to understand inconceivable power through our tiny brain. next verse. So the next verse, Swami Prabhupada says, so the connection from the previous verse to this verse is that the previous verse, Swami Prabhupada had used the word Vibhumna, Durvibhavi Vibhumna. Lord has inconceivable potential because it is very powerful, Vibhumna. And now in this verse, he tells about the different powers of the Lord. What are the different powers of the Lord? Our Prabhupada says that the supreme authority and its inconceivable power can be studied from this particular verse. The supreme authority of the Lord and its inconceivable power, which is actually indicated in the previous verse, can be studied in this verse. The 19th verse tells about the different inconceivable powers of the Supreme Lord. Sonanto nantakaraskalo anadir adikritavyaya janam janena janayan marayan mrityu nantakam.
My dear Dhruva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is ever existent, but in the form of time, He is the pillar of everything. He has no beginning, although He is the beginning of everything. Nor is He ever exhaustible. Although everything is exhaustible in due course of time, the living entities are created through the agencies of fire and killed through the agencies of death. But He is perfectly free of birth and death.
Just one more point. The previous verse, Purport Prabhupada, the second paragraph, he talks about this is the Achintya Bheda Bheda philosophy, how the Supreme Lord is simultaneously one with this energy, at the same time is different from the energy. And he gives the example of how the sun is, fire is created in one place, but while the heat and light produced with the fire act in many different ways. Yes. Heat and light are the energy from the fire, but still they are different from the fire. Now in the 19th verse, Swami Prabhupada talks about the five different powers of the Lord. He says how the Lord, this Lord is ever existing, but destroys everything in the form of time. So ananto antakara kalu. He is ever existing, but he destroys everything in the form of time. And anadir adikrit. Anadi and adikrit. He is the beginning of everything, but he is without beginning. Anadi without beginning, but he is the beginning of everything, adikrit. And the third power is avyaya. Avyaya means that he is inexhaustible, although everything is exhausted in due course of time. Our Prabhupada writes in the purport that the Supreme Lord is inexhaustible like the touchstone which supplies everything. It's like inexhaustible like the touchstone which supplies everything. And the fourth quality of the Lord, the fourth power of the Lord is that Janam Janena Janayan. That means the Supreme Lord causes the birth of everyone. Janam. How does He cause? Janena Janayan. Through the agency of father and mother, but He is without birth. He causes the birth of everyone through the agency of father and mother, but He is without birth. And the fifth point is that Marayan Mrityuna Antakam. He causes the death of everyone. How does He cause the death of everyone? Through other jivas. That's like He causes the birth of everyone through other jivas. He causes the death of everyone through different living entities or through the agency of death. But He is without death. Vishnu Chakravarti adds one point that the Supreme Lord destroys even Kalagni Rudra. He destroys even Yama by Kalagni Rudra as a destroyer. So Prabhupada in the purport, he says that how the creation occurs many times, everything is maintained, and after a time everything is annihilated, but the original creator remains untouched and undiminished in power. Especially in the second paragraph, he talks about he gives examples for the third and fourth night, especially for the fourth night, that Mrityun, Marayan Mrityun Antakam, the Supreme Lord kills different people through the agency of different living entities or through the agency of death. So Father gives the example of Napoleon and Hitler. And Prabhupada says that these people, they have killed so many people. But then they were also killed, at some point of time. People are still very much interested in writing and reading books about Hitler and Bonaparte, but and how they killed so many people in war. And so many people are writing so many books about Hitler. But then nobody is researching how Hitler was killed, who killed Hitler and who created such a gigantic killer of human beings. People are writing books about how he killed so many people, but nobody is trying to find out who killed Hitler. So Prabhupada says that the devotees of the Lord are not much interested in the study of the flickering history of the world. They are interested only in him who is the original creator, maintainer and annihilator. And that is the purpose of the Krishna consciousness movement. Like in one lecture, Prabhupada was explaining about the Second World War. So he summarized the whole Second World War by saying that Second World War happened because Hitler said that sense gratification should happen in this particular way. And Churchill mentioned, no, sense gratification should be performed in a different way. And because there was a difference in opinion, so there was a war. The war was not because of some certain dharmic reason, it's only because of sense gratification. And Prabhupada gave an example that sometimes in a school, in a classroom, the teacher wants to punish some children. They make two students rise, and then they make the two students pull each other's ear and then make rise up and down. So similarly, material nature, when it wants to punish different living entities, they have material nature creates war between two different nations or two different people, and then make those living entities kill each other. But this is all happening. They are all used as an agent in the hands of the Supreme Lord, the hands of the material nature, who is acting under the control of the Supreme Lord. Now in the 20th and the 21st verse, Sai Baba Manu talks about how the Supreme Lord is not partial to anyone. So therefore he cannot be blamed. Lord cannot be blamed because he is equal to all. Navaiswa Pakshosya Vipaksha Yevava Parasya Mrityor Vishatasramam Praja Samdavamanam Anudavantyanicha Yatarajam Chanilam Bhuta Sangha.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his feature of eternal time, is present in the material world and is neutral towards everyone. No one on his ally and no one is enemy. Within the jurisdiction of the time and the moment, everyone enjoys or suffers the result of his own karma or fruitive activity. As when the wind blows, some particles of dust fly in the air. So according to one's particular karma, one suffers or enjoys material life.
Basically, the whole theme of the Sai Baba Manu's these 10 verses is that he's trying to tell Dhruva Maharaj that do not think these extras are the cause of the death of your brother. The ultimate cause is the Supreme Lord. Don't give up your enmity towards these people. That is he's trying to drive this point. So he has been explaining how the Supreme Lord is the cause of creation, maintenance and destruction. Dhruva Maharaj might get the question, the Supreme Lord is the cause of the death of my brother Uttam and not the Yaksha. these kind, so one may then only develop some kind of hatred towards the Supreme Lord. So he is trying to say the Supreme Lord is not to be blamed because he is equal to everyone. Navaisva pakshosya vipaksha yeva va. He has no friend or he has no enemy. And parasya mrityor vishata samam praja. Parasya mrityor vishata samam praja. He actually enters all the living entities as death equally. Equally enters every living entity as death. So the Lord is actually equal to everyone. But we are seeing inequality because of the different karmas of different living entities. The Lord is equal to everyone because of the different types of karmas of different living entities, we see different results, we see inequality. So tam davamanam anudavant anisha. Tam davamanam anudavanti. That means the living entities, they follow the Supreme Lord being dependent on the Lord. Anisha means the living entities are dependent on the Lord. The living entity, they follow the Lord being dependent on the Lord. And then the fourth line, I'll give you an analogy. Yata rajamsi anilam bhuta sangha. Just like when a wind is blowing, different dust particles, they actually follow the wind. Vishnu Chakravarti explains that just as the wind does not see difference whether dust causing darkness or water or fire enter it, so the Lord sees no difference though the jivas experience different karma. Sometimes the dust particles enter a different, maybe some water, droplets of water or fire may enter the wind, but the wind does not see any difference. So similarly, the Lord is actually equal to everyone. So the living entities are called Anisha because they are dependent on their karma associated with the elements. They are dependent on the Supreme Lord. So Prabhupada in the purport, he gives two examples to tell that how the Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. The first thing he explains is how the government gives everyone the same facilities for governmental action and management. But a citizen, by his own choice, he chooses a particular situation and which obliges him to exist under different types of consciousness. So, a citizen, by his own choice, he chooses to maybe stay in the prison house. But actually the government is providing equal facilities. The second example, he just elaborating the example given in the verse, Yata Rajamsi Anilam Bhuta Sangha. When the wind blows, particles of dust float in the air. Gradually lightning occurs and then torrents of rain follow. And thus the rainy season creates a situation of varieties in the forest. But God is very kind that he gives everyone an equal chance, but with the resultant actions of one's karma, one suffers or enjoys in this material world. So this verse also, so Sanibhu Manu, what is he trying to say in essence is that the Supreme Lord is not responsible for the death of your brother. Although the Lord is the ultimate cause of everything, but you cannot blame the Lord because he is not responsible for the death of your brother. So that's what Prabhupada, I think, writes in the purport. He is not responsible for anyone's material sufferings or enjoyment. Anybody knows a similar verse in the Gita where Krishna is, as Krishna says, that Lord is not responsible. Adhyani Namasamjana. The fifth chapter verse, Krishna says that I do not assume anybody's pious or sinful reactions. So this is the point of Prabhu Manu. And the 21st verse again is continuing. Thirteenth chapter. How the Lord is equal to it.
Kaka, the best of you, Uttama, he is relieving his hatred towards Vastaka. When the hatred is gone, then there can be forgiveness, there can be freedom from, you know, wanting to act immediately, respecting Christ. No? Because the prayer is not the cause of my father's death, and what am I doing? Whole cell war. I was curious why he is trying to prove that the Lord is also not the cause of the. He is saying that the material nature is actually the cause. Material nature brings forth karma according to one's past actions and you know the subsequent reactions. Neither the Lord is directly involved, nor are the jackass who are mere instruments. No. So he is putting on the material nature and the whole this thing.
So 21st verse also he gives the 28th and 21st verse. In both verses he explains how the Lord is equal to everyone. 21st verse he says that some living entities, they have short lifespan, some living entities have long lifespan according to their karma, and both are awarded by the Supreme Lord. But there is no question of increase or decrease the lifespan of the Supreme Lord. So here trying to say basically every living entity, different living entities have short or long lifespan according to their karma awarded by the Lord. Lord is the ultimate cause. It's awarded by the Lord, but according to their karma, Lord awards the according to their karma. Difference is equal to everyone. According to their karma, he actually awards the lifespan. So therefore he is trying to say Lord is the ultimate cause, these extras are not the cause, but then, and also he is trying to say, just because Lord is cause, don't develop a hatred towards the extra. One is that Dhruva Maharaj has to give up his hatred towards the extra so that he stops fighting. And but that does not mean that understanding the Supreme Lord is the ultimate cause, you develop hatred towards the Supreme Lord. Therefore he is trying to say, you do not have a hatred towards the Supreme Lord because he is equal to everyone. He is just awarding the results according to one's own karma. That is like the theme of this question. Ayusho apachayan janto tataivo apachayan vibhu ubhavyam rahitasvasto dushasya vidadatyasau.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is all powerful. He awards the result of one's stupid activity. Thus, although one living entity's duration of life is very small, whereas that of another is very great, he is always in its transcendental position, and there is no question of lessening or increasing his duration of life.
So Prabhupada says that the very short duration of the life of a mosquito and the very long lifetime of Lord Brahma are both awarded to the Supreme Lord according to the results of their karma. But then he mentions karmani nirdagati kintucha bhakti bhajam yasvinda gopa matavendra mahotva karma bandhanu rupa phalabhajana matanoti karmani nirdagati kintucha bhakti bhajam govinda madhipurushan. But the Lord diminishes or vanquishes the reactions of devotees under the laws of karma. The living entity wanders within the universe under the rules of eternal time, and sometimes he becomes a mosquito and sometimes Lord Brahma. To a sane man, this business is not very fruitful. So now in the 22nd verse, Swayambhu Manu says, he talks about five different opinions, five types of philosophers about the cause of happiness and distress in this world. He gives the opinion of five different types of philosophers who tell about the cause of happiness and distress in this world. It is like similar to cow and bull, the conversation. He tells the five different opinions, and then he tells like what is the actual cause of happiness and distress. He tells in the next verse.
Kyuchit karma vadantenam svabhavam apare nripa eke kalam pare daivam tumtas kamam utapare. The differentiation among varieties of life and their suffering and enjoyment is explained by some to be the result of karma. Others say it's due to nature, others due to time, others due to fate, and still others say that it is due to desire. So, kyuchit karma, some say that because of karma a person enjoys happiness and distress. Some people say that it is the nature of things, svabhavam, or nature of matter. Krishna Chakratapuri says that the lokayatas or the followers of Charvak, they say it is the nature of matter that is the cause of happiness and distress. Chemicals. Eke kalam. Some people say that it is the time factor which is the cause of happiness and distress. The philosophers called as Vyavaharikas, they have this kind of conception. And some people say that the planets are the cause of happiness and distress. Apare Daivam. The Grahas. And then some other people say Kamam. Kamam means some people say that the lust is the cause of happiness and distress. So Prabhupada, Vishnu Chakotakur quotes one particular verse from Mahanarayana Upanishad. So Prabhupada quotes a part of that verse in the purport. There's a verse in the Mahanarayana Upanishad which says that Kamo akarshit kamaha karoti kamaha karta kamaha karayita. This is the fifth type of opinion of the a certain type of philosopher called as Vatsyayana. The fifth type of opinion is that lust is the cause of happiness and distress. So in order to prove that lust is the cause of happiness and distress, Vishnu Chakotavar is quoting this particular verse from Mahanarayana Upanishad. Kamo akarshi. That means like lust has done it. And kamaha karoti. Lust is actually doing it. Kamaha karta, and lust is the doer. And kamaha karayita, lust causes us to act. So Prabhupada quotes that verse, just the first two lines he mentions, kamo karshit. So in the purport, the whole purport of Prabhupada is, he talks about how the, because of material desire, a living entity tries to lord it over material nature, and then he experiences different miseries. Material desire is the cause of all suffering. And then he tells, but the solution to get freedom from suffering is not simply to give up the material desires, but to convert the material desires into spiritual desires. Because a living entity cannot be free from any desire. Just like water in one form, water in the form of iceberg, it makes the ship sink into the ocean. But water in its original form, the liquid form, it actually helps the ship to actually float in the ocean. So desire in one form, in the form of material desire, it actually makes the living entity go fall down in material existence. But desire in another form, spiritual desire, helps the living entity to stay in the midst of material circumstances. It helps the person to advance. The whole purpose of Prabhupada is about desire. Narottam Das Thakur advises that one turns his desire towards serving the Supreme Lord, then desire becomes spiritual. So now the 23rd verse, Sainthomanu says, so he talked about five different opinions about the cause of happiness and distress. So now naturally the next question is, who among these philosophers is correct? What is the correct opinion about the cause of happiness and distress among these five opinions?
The answer is that Sanma Muni said, actually none of them are right. Because all these different philosophers, they are simply trying to speculate or argue by taking shelter of one of the energies of the Lord. And all these different philosophers, they are wrong because they do not know the root cause of everything. They will be right to some extent. Some extent you can say, grahas are the cause, you can say, but then ultimately they are not right because the ultimate cause is the Supreme Lord because they are not aware of the root cause of everything. So all these five opinions are wrong.
So, 23rd verse. Avyakta avyaktasya aprameyasya nana shak udayasya cha navaiti kirtitam tata kovedatasva sambhavam.
The absolute truth, transcendence, is never subject to the understanding of imperfect sensory endeavors, nor is he subject to direct experience. He is the master of varieties of energy, like the full material energy, and no one can understand his plans or actions. Therefore, it should be concluded that although he is the original cause of all causes, no one can know him by invisibility.
So all these people, by taking shelter of one of these shaktis of time or karma or the nature of things, they are arguing this. But there can be no arguments about the cause of these shaktis. And he's also explained that Navai Sikir Shitam Tata. Navai Sikir Shitam means nobody can understand the plan of the Lord. So Vishnu Chakravarti also quotes this verse, famous verse spoken by Bhishma. Anybody know that verse? That nobody can understand the plan of the Lord. No. Nahyasya karhichit rajan puman veda vidhishyatam yad vidhijnasaya yukta mukhyanti kavayopihi. Nobody can understand the plan of the Lord. And Vishnu Chakravarti also quotes another verse from the Shruti. So, to say, just to substantiate this point, Navai Sikir Sitam, nobody can understand the plan of the Lord. He quotes a verse from Taittiriya Brahmana. Koda Veda Ka Iha Pravochat Kuta Ajata Kula Iyam Visrishti Arva Deva Asya Visarjane Nata Ko Veda Yata Avabhuva. Who knows him? Who speaks of him? From whom was he born? From what was he produced? He precedes the devatas. Who knows from where he appeared for creating this universe? These are some of the verses to quote in the Vishnu Chakravarti to show how nobody understands the plan of the Lord. The Prabhupada in the purpose, Prabhupada especially in the first paragraph, he talks about how one cannot understand the Supreme Lord simply by speculation. And then he elaborates the example of Dr. Frog, how the frog was trying to estimate the length and breadth of the ocean. And then he gives an example of how the Supreme Lord cannot be understood by ascending process and he can be understood only by the descending process. And he gives the example of how sound cannot be made visible by some torchlight. Says that no one can say that he has discovered a torchlight so powerful that if one goes on a roof and focuses the torchlight on the night sky, the sun will then be seen. Such a torchlight is not possible. The sun can be seen only when the sun reveals himself. This is another example Prabhupada gives for how the Lord cannot be understood by ascending process but by the descending process. And then Prabhupada explains the same point that Navai Sikir Sitam. Nobody can understand the plan of the Lord. And he says, what a person can understand, with respect to scientists he mentioned, a scientist can understand only the material energies of the Lord and that too partially. How the material energies of the Lord are working to some degree, small degree. So then if you want to understand the Supreme Lord, how do we understand? Then further he explains that one should understand the Supreme Lord from the words of the Supreme Lord, from the Bhagavad Gita, and under the guidance of a Guru. That's how Prabhupada concludes the purport. So now in the 24th verse, Swayambhu Manu gives sort of a conclusion to this series of verses. Na chaite putra chabratur hantaro dana danuga visarga dana yostata pumso daivam hi karanam.
Madhyotta, those youngsters who are descendants of Kuvera are not actually the killers of your brother. The birth and death of every living entity are caused by the Supreme, who is certainly the cause of all causes.
So extras are not the cause, they are not the killers of your brother. The Supreme Lord is the ultimate cause. Next verse. Sayeva Vishvam Sugati Sayeva Vati Hantitya Atat Anahankaran Nadyate Guna Karma Bihi.
Maintain it and analyze it in due course of time, but because his transcendental research activities is never affected by ego in such action or by the modes of material nature.
So he is again trying to say, just like the 20th and the 21st verse, he explained how the Lord is actually equal to everyone, the Lord is actually, Lord should not be blamed. So here he says that, he mentioned that the yakshas are not the cause of the death of your brother, the Supreme Lord has caused. But then in this verse he mentions, the Lord creates, maintains and destroys, but he does all these things without a sense of false ego. So because he performs all these activities without a sense of false ego, therefore he is not to be blamed. Because if he understands, oh, Lord is the cause of the death of my brother, and then if he develops hatred towards the Lord, then it's like operation successful, patient dies. You become free from the hatred towards the yaksha, but then you develop a hatred towards the Lord. So therefore he says, you should not even blame the Lord, because Lord acts without a sense of false ego. So that's why the word used is Atapi Anahankaran Nadyate Guna Karma Bihi. He is never affected by ego in such action or by the modes of material nature. So Prabhupada in the purport, he talks about the Lord has no false ego because he has no material body. Because there is no difference between his body and soul. And since he has no material body, but false ego is when you misidentify yourself with the body or the mind or this. Because there's no difference between his body and soul, there's no question of false ego. And he is not affected by his actions. So Prabhupada quotes, Namam Karmani Limpanti, Name Karma Faleshuha. He also quotes, Avajananti Mamuda, Manushim Tanumashutam. So then he makes another interesting point. He says that the living entity, even if he has a large accumulation of a mode of goodness, but still the body of a conditioned soul is material. But whereas Krishna's body is never material, it is transcendental. So now in the 26th verse, Swayambhu Manu says, how is the Supreme Lord able to act without ahankara? Of course, Prabhupada explained that Lord has no ahankara because he has no material body. But here, Swayambhu Manu explains another reason. How is it that the Lord is able to act without ahankara, without material identity? So, further, the reason he mentions is that because the Lord uses his energy of Maya Shakti, so therefore he is able to act without ahankar. That's what he explains. Krishna Chakudha explains in the 26th verse purport. ఏష భూతాని భూతాత్మా భూతేషు భూత భావనః సత్య మాయయా యుక్త సృజత్ అతి చ పాపి చ.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the super soul of all living entities. He is the controller and maintainer of everyone. Through the agency of his external energy, he creates, maintains and annihilates everyone.
So this verse explains why the Lord is without attachment or material identity, because he uses his energy of Maya. And since the external energy is not a Swarupa Shakti, so therefore, although he is employing the external energy, because it is not a Swarupa Shakti, he does not undergo material identity of Ahankara in performing this action. He does not undergo any egoistic transformation, because he is using the material energy which is not a Swarupa Shakti. Then, in the 27th to 30th verse, so he has explained, Lord is the cause of the death of your brother, but Lord performs creation, maintenance and destruction without a sense of false ego. And he is able to perform this action without a sense of false ego because he is employing his external energy which is not a Swarupa Shakti. So now the question is that, Swami Mahamuni is explaining, how can we act without a sense of false ego? How can we act without a sense of false ego? In order for we to act without a sense of false ego, we have to act by surrendering to the Lord. So that is the theme of the next four verses, 27th to 30th verse. How you must surrender to the Lord. When you surrender to the Lord, you will give up this false ego of enemy and friend. Or Vishnu Chakrabartakur explains that he says that Dhruva Maharaj is telling the Swami Manu, although whatever you say is actually appealing to me, but still I am not able to give up my ego, I am not able to give up my hatred towards the external. So therefore Swami Manu says, you cannot give up the false ego simply by jhana alone. You can give up the false ego, you can become free from false ego only when you surrender to the Lord. So that is the theme of the next four verses. So we will take a 5 minutes break and then we will continue. 27th verse. Thank you. one particular world, there is a criteria world. The 27th verse. Very beautiful. Tameva mrityum amrutam tata daivam sarvatmano pehi jagat parayanam yatmai balin vishvasrajo haranti gavo yatavai nasidama yantrita.
My dear boy Dhruva, please surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead who will guide the progress of the world. Everyone, including the demigod headed by Lord Brahma, is working under his control. Just will, prompted by a rope in its nose, is controlled by its owner.
As I mentioned, that Dhruva Maharaj says to Swayambhu Manu at this point, though I have been enlightened by you, but still I cannot give up my ego. In the case of the Supreme Lord, because he has a spiritual body, there is no question of false ego. But in our case, we have a material body. So how can we give up the ego? We cannot give the ego simply by jnana alone. So that's what Swayambhu Manu says. Surrender to him, without surrender, it is difficult to give up the ego by jnana alone. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, the material disease is to declare independence from the Supreme Controller. Factually, our material existence begins when we forget the Supreme Controller and wish to lord it over material nature. Everyone in this material world is trying his best to become the Supreme Controller, individually, nationally, socially, and in many other ways. Guru Maharaj was advised to start fighting by his grandfather, who was concerned that Dhruva was adhering to a personal ambition to fight to annihilate the whole race of the Rakshas. In other words, Saimbhumanu was trying to eradicate the last tinges of false ego, a false ambition in Dhruva, by explaining the position of the Supreme Controller. See this verse, we can see the greatness and the sweetness of that. Tameva Mrityum and Amritam. Prabhupada explained this word, Mrityum and Amritam. The Lord is Mrityu for the non-devotees. He appears as death for the non-devotees. But he becomes Amrita or nectar or immortality for the devotees. This is like the greatness and sweetness of the Lord. And another thing Prabhupada explains is that this verse explains the position of Supreme Controller, who is worshipped even by the demigods. Yasmai Balim Vishvasrujo Haranti. Vishvasrujo means even great demigods like Brahma, they offer different gifts to. Yasmai Balim means offering this, give different gifts to the Supreme Lord. Just like a bull is controlled by its owner through the rope in its mouth. So the rope in his nose. Similarly, all the demigods are controlled by the Supreme Lord. And so that Supreme Lord, what is the nature of the Supreme Lord? Jagat Parayanam. Jagat Parayanam means the ultimate goal of the whole world. And you must surrender to him in all respects. Sarvatmana Upehi. Sarvatmana means in all respects you must surrender. Upehi. So basically this verse says that this theme is that simply having some theoretical knowledge is not sufficient to give up the false ego. You see, many persons in the Prabhupada writes in the purport, if I remember one purport in the 10th chapter, 2nd chapter, the Prabhupada says, simply having knowledge is not sufficient, there has to be practical service. Yesterday we were having a meeting with the devotee was saying that how Radhanath Swami Maharaj was explaining how he was telling to create more and more facilities for devotees to engage in different services. So he was telling about congregation, that when people take up some responsibilities and services, then they are able to grow up in their, they are able to grow in their spiritual life. Of course, hearing and chanting is definitely good, but then when people get some opportunity for some active services and responsibilities, then that helps them to grow. So here, so Prabhupada also writes, I think the 10th canto, 2nd chapter, 4th canto in the Puranjan section, one purport, the Bhagavad Gita purport. He talks about how one has to be engaged in the practical service. Then it's not simply having knowledge, but one has to engage in the practical service in order to advance. So that's what he is explaining here. Without surrender, it is difficult to give up ego by jnana alone. Next verse. Yaha pancha varsho jananim samihaya matis tapatya vachasa binna marma vanam gatas tapasa pratyagaksham aradhya mede murnipadam trilokya.
My dear Dhruva, at the age of only 5 years, you were very grievously afflicted by the words of your mother's co-wife. And you very boldly gave up the protection of your mother and went to the forest to engage in the yogic process for realization of the Supreme Person, the Godhead. As a result of this, you have already achieved the topmost position in all the tables.
Vishnu Chakrabarti writes in this purport, become the lotus of your dynasty by surrendering to the Lord. So here, Saimbhumanu is reminding just Dhruva Maharaj how at the age of 5 years only, when you were hurt by the harsh words of your stepmother, Vinna Marma, then you performed austerities and then you worshipped the Supreme Lord and you have actually achieved the topmost position in the three worlds by your austerity. So here, Prabhupada writes here, actually, although Swami Mahamuni is giving so many instructions, Swami Mahamuni is actually very proud of Dhruva Maharaj. So Dhruva Maharaj has achieved the most difficult position even at the age of 5 years, direct darshan of the Lord, and the benediction that he can go to the spiritual world. And he says that Swami Mahamuni is not only the glory of the dynasty, sorry, Dhruva Maharaj is not only the glory of the dynasty of Swayambhu Manu, but Dhruva Maharaj is the glory of the entire human race. It's the glory of the entire human race. And so therefore Swayambhu Manu says that since you are already surrendered to the Lord, even at the age of 5 years of surrender to the Lord, act in a way that is befitting a surrendered soul. So in this way is again reminding Dhruva Maharaj. So you see that Swayambhu Manu is speaking to Dhruva Maharaj with great affection. In so many verses he addresses Dhruva Maharaj by the word Tata or Anga. Sometimes he addresses by the word Indrupa, okay. Mainly as Tata, Anga. These are all very affectionate addresses. Just like if a person is supposed to join Oxford University, he's got admission, he's got a seat there, and then if he's found copying in some exam, you are already destined to go to the spiritual world, so better act befitting such a person. Why are you acting in this way? The 29th verse.
Tamena mangatmani mukta vigrahe vyapartam nirgunam yetam aksharam atmana manditya vimukta matmadrit yasmin idam vedam asatratiyate.
My dear Dhruva, please therefore turn your attention to the Supreme Person who is the infallible Brahman. Save the Supreme Personality of Godhead in your original position and just by self-realization, you will find this material differentiation to be merely
Supreme. So, Swami Mahamuni is telling you must turn your attention to the Lord. And what is the result of turning the attention to the Lord? You will find that the differentiation in the bodily platform to be flickering. That means, essentially saying, you will stop perceiving, oh, this person is enemy and this person is a friend. So, tamenam anga, here also he is addressing by the word anga. Tamenam anga, atmani mukta vigrahe. Vyapasthitam nirgunam etam aksharam. Mukta vigrahe means, Vishnu Chakrathakur says, seek out the Supreme Lord means like atmanam anvichya. Anvichya means seek out the Lord. Atmanam, seek out the Lord in your mind which is devoid of partiality. Mukta vigraha means seek out the Supreme Lord in your mind devoid of partiality. And what is the nature of the Supreme Lord? Nirgunam ekam aksharam. Indestructible. The one ekam. Seek out in your mind devoid of partiality the one ekam. Indestructible aksharam, aksharam and nirgunam, eternally liberated Lord beyond the guna. And then what the another quality of the Lord? Yapashritam. This is the second line, the four words in the second line that describe the different qualities of the Lord. Yekam, the one Supreme Lord who is indestructible, aksharam, who is beyond the three modes. And Yapashritam. Yapashritam means the Supreme Lord who resides within you out of affection. So seek out this Supreme Lord who is having these four qualities in your mind devoid of hostility, mukta vigrahe. Think of the Supreme Lord in your mind without divide of partiality. So then what will be the result? Vimuktam Atmadrik. Atmadrik means on seeing that Supreme Lord, Atmadrik, on seeing the Supreme Lord, what will happen? Yasmin idam vedam asat pratiyate. Idam vedam. Idam means this world which is filled with vedam, dualities. This world which is filled with dualities, how will we perceive asat pratiyate? You will see this world which is filled with dualities, you will find it very disgusting. Asat pratiyate. So basically he is saying that seek out the Lord, turn your attention to the Lord, result of seeing to the Lord is that you will not no more find the material duality. So now the 30th verse, now in this verse Swayambhuvamuni is saying, is again reminding, actually don't you remember at the age of 5 years when you performed austerities, when you got darshan of the Lord, after getting darshan of the Lord, that time you completely forgot the enmity towards, if you remember in the 9th chapter it comes when Dhruva Maharaj returned home, that even Suruchi actually was shedding tears, she came and actually embraced Dhruva Maharaj. In that verse comes that just like a water naturally flows down. Yasya prasanno bhagavan gunair maitradubir hariri. So, like water naturally flows down, the person who has pleased the Supreme Lord, all the good qualities approach him. And then, that means one of the good qualities that he becomes dear to everyone. And Suruchi also became dear to Dhruva Maharaj. So, Swayambhuva Muni is saying, don't you remember, at the age of 5 years, because of performing devotional service to the Lord, you actually completely freed from all the enmity, became freed from all the material differentiations. So similarly, now also seek your attention towards the Supreme Lord, you will become freed from all these enmities and material differentiations. So that explains in the 30th verse.
Svampratyagatmani tada bhagavatyananta anandamatravupapanna samastha sattau bhaktim vidaya paramam chanakaira vidya grantim vibhetya simamahamiti prarudam. Thus, regaining your natural position in rendering service unto the Supreme Lord, who is the all-powerful reservoir of all pleasure, and who lives in all living entities as a super soul, you will very soon forget the illusory understanding of I and mine.
So, really, it's mentioned that when you are 5 years old, by performing pure devotion to the Lord, tada, that means at that time when you perform, by performing pure devotion to the Lord, who is a soul within, unlimited, full of bliss, ananda matra, and endowed with all shakti, upapanna samasta shakta, you gradually cut the strong knot of ignorance concerning I and mind. Ganti vibhetyasi mama aham iti prarudam. It's reminding that. Do you not remember how you attained the Lord when you were 5 years old? So in the same way you must give up that enmity. So if you remember, we can see here, like Dhruva Maharaj offered that prayer. Tena smaran, he asked for the association of devotees, bhaktim muhu pravahatam toyime prasanga bhuyab ananta mahatam amulashayana. The next verse he says, what is the result of association of the devotees? Tena smaran ki atitaram priyamisha martyam yechan vadas kuta sukhrut griha vitta dara ye prajya nama bhavadiya padaravinda sauganda lubda sudayesu kuta prasanga. So the result of association with the devotees of the Lord is that a person forgets the attachment towards Suta, Suhrut, Griha, Vitta, Dara, the house, wife, the relatives, and family, and also a person forgets the a person becomes freed from the attachment towards even the body. Kena smaram atita ram, it is very difficult. All these attachments are like very difficult to give up. Kena smaram atita ram priyamisha martyam yeshan vada suta sudhrad griha vitta dara. I think the result of association with the devotees is that a person actually gives up the attachment towards me and mine. So Dhruva Maharaj offered that prayer. So now the Lord is actually known as fulfilling that prayer. When Dhruva Maharaj is overwhelmed with that enemy towards the excess, Lord is actually sending, Lord has sent Swayambhu Manu on the great stages, and through their association the Lord is actually making him free from this conception of hatred. So what he prayed for, what he prayed to the Supreme Lord, that is being fulfilled by the Supreme Lord by his instructions of Swayambhu Manu when he is actually caught in the situation. So now Swayambhu Manu says that you must give up my anger by hearing my instructions. Samyachya rosam badram te pratipam shreyasam param shrutena bhuyasa rajan agadena yatamayam.
Dear King, just consider what I have said to you. This will act as a medicinal treatment upon disease. Control your anger, for anger is the foremost enemy on the path of spiritual realization. I wish all good fortune for you. Please follow my instructions.
So here Prabhupada writes a very beautiful purport here. So Dhruva Maharaj fought vehemently and punished the excess sufficiently. But anger is such that if one increases it increases unlimitedly. In order that Dhruva Maharaj's kingly anger not exceed the limit, Manu was kind enough to check his grandson. So definitely as a king, in order to maintain law and order, sometimes violence is required. As a Prabhupada quotes the story of Narada Muni and the snake. That the Narada Muni told the snake that I told you not to bite, but you can hiss in order to protect yourself. So Prabhupada writes in his purport that in the common world, when there is a mischief made by others, one should not forget to become angry, at least for the time being, in order to drive away the miscreants. So many times in the practical world, one may have to become angry in order to drive away the miscreants. But the nature of anger is such that it can increase beyond its limits. So that is the nature of the passion. One may have to use violence, but then the nature of passion is that it can completely carry away a person. That initially a person may want to use the anger as a tool, but later he may become the tool in the hands of anger. So that danger is there. So basically, both like not using violence, like sometimes violence is definitely required, as explained that. Ahimsa paramo dharma. Ahimsa is the highest dharma, but then when violence is performed for the sake of dharma, that is also dharma. Violence is performed for the sake of establishing dharma, that violence is also dharma. That is the next line of the verse. And many times people quote only the first line of the verse. So definitely violence is required to maintain law and order, at that time when non-violence is practiced, and that non-violence is actually a greater violence than the crime of the criminal. In that sense, if you see like Gandhiji's practice of non-violence, in one sense that led to so much of violence also. So but at the same time the danger is that when a person individual activities of passion, it can actually carry away a person. Instead of using the anger as a tool, one can become the tool in the hands of anger. So therefore, anger, passion has to be always guided by people who are in the mode of goodness. So it has to be always act in the hands of, under the guidance of the Brahmana. So, of course, like we as Brahmacharis or as a Brahmana, we are supposed to play the role of Brahmana. In our case, there is no question of actually acting violently. In the case of Dromaraj, as a Kshatriya, it was not wrong in the sense of like punishing a Yaksha. But the mistake was that he actually exceeded the limit. He became excessively angry. That's why Sambhu Manu came. But in the case of a Brahmana, like suppose somebody comes, somebody say, caught stealing in GEV or something like that. So, if we actually, if we ask Brahmacharya, if we start beating that person, then it will create a very bad signal. We have that. It actually happened, like there was one instance few years back. There was some quarrel with some temple, some neighbors, something was, one big festival was happening with them. Devotees were trying to resolve, and then suddenly one Brahmachari came, and then he said something, and then so because the other party, there were some women were there, and then he said something, and then that actually worsened the situation. Then other devotees later they said that actually the mistake was that he should not have come and spoken. We could have, we as a congregation, we could have actually handled the whole situation without actually, but because he came and he said something that actually increased the problem even more. So as a Kshatriya, as a Dromaraj, he was definitely nothing wrong in actually punishing the extra, but the mistake was that he became excessively angry. But as Brahmanas, like suppose somebody is found doing something wrong, there may be certain emergency situation, but then usually we should hand over to somebody who can actually properly deal with the particular person. Otherwise, it can actually work in the situation. So then, here Prabhupada writes another beautiful point, how to actually check anger. So he comments on this word, Sutena Bhuyasa Rajan. Sutena Bhuyasa means, by constantly hearing, one can actually check the force of anger. It is detrimental to the path of devotional service. And then he quotes Parikshit Maharaj's verse that, constant hearing of the pastimes of the Lord. Tasmat Bharata Sarvatma Bhagavan Ishwaro Hari. Shortavya Kriti Tavyasya Mattavya Kriti. That was or Harel Namanu Kriti. What does it mean? Harel. Same thing. So you're quoting that verse. So if you see, so another important point we can see here is that Dromaraj definitely an exalted devotee, but then he became a little excessively angry. But the main point we can learn is that when Swayambhu Manu guided him, gave his instructions, then Dromaraj stopped fighting. So the great devotees, it is not that they don't commit mistakes, but the point is that when they are given the feedback, when they are given guidance, how they become submissive to those authorities. So that is actually how they respond. They may commit mistakes, but their greatness is that it's not that they don't commit mistakes, but the greatness is that how they respond to the mistakes and how they remain submissive in all situations to their superiors. So Dromaraj, he became excessively angry, but then his greatness is that how he was submissive to Sangha Manu's instruction and how he gave up his anger. So that actually makes him actually glorious. And we can see another thing is that sometimes when you are absorbed in doing a particular activity, we may not realize that how it is having an adverse effect on others. So at that time we have to be open to the feedback of somebody who is the observer of our activity. Sometimes in the because of being absorbed in the mode of passion, we will be thinking that that we are doing the service perfectly, but we may not realize that how it is actually having a different effect elsewhere in certain section of people. So we have to be always aware of that we open the feedback of somebody who is an observer of the activity. So Dhruva Maharaj was absorbed in fighting and he couldn't see, but Sanubhav Manmadu came and instructed, and then he was open to the feedback and he stopped the fighting. So now the 32nd verse, Sanubhav Manmadu says, what is the danger of anger? See, 31st verse he mentioned that you must control the anger. So 32nd verse he says that you must control the anger, because when a person becomes angry, that other people become fearful of that angry person. So therefore you must actually control your anger. Yenopasrishta purushal loka udvijate prisham na buddhas tatva samgatse ishyan abhayam atmanaha.
The person who desires liberation from this material world should not fall under the control of anger, because when bewildered by anger, one becomes the source of dread for all others.
So he says, other people become angry, fearful of the angry person, and then second reason is saying that if you want to attain liberation, then one should actually become free from anger. One should control the anger. So Prabhupada writes here that the demoniac are always present and they find fault even in saintly persons. But a saintly person never becomes angry even if there is a very great provocation. Now, the last reason he mentions is that actually by your killing of the yakshas, you have been offensive to Kuvera, because all these yakshas are the family members of Kuvera. And Kuvera is the younger brother of Lord Shiva. So basically you have acted in a way displeasing to Kuvera and the Lord Shiva. So therefore you must immediately go and pacify Kuvera with the sweet words and gentle behavior, and you must pacify him. So that is the concluding words of that. Helanam Guru Shabratur Dana Dasyatva Yakratam Yad Jagnivan Punyajanan Bratrudnan Ityamarsitaha.
My dear Prabhu, you thought that the yakshas killed your brother, and therefore you have killed a great number of them. But by this action you have agitated the mind of Lord Shiva's brother Kuvera, who is a prisoner of the demigods. Please note that your actions have been very disrespectful to Kuvera and Lord Shiva.
Samprasadaya vattasu sannatya prasra yoktibihi nayavan magatam teja kulamno abhidavishyati.
For this reason, my son, you should immediately pacify Kuvera with gentle words and prayers, and that his wrath may not affect our family.
So Prabhupada talks about how in common dealings we should have friendly behavior with everyone, especially exalted demigods like Kuvera. In our scenario, it may be like we have to have friendly behavior with maybe some local officials or maybe some government authorities. So that is the point. And then he mentions that you must actually pacify Kuvera and Lord Shiva in order to protect our family. Otherwise, their wrath may actually affect our family. So last verse is the translation.
Sanubhav Manmadu, after giving instruction to Dhruva Maharaj, his grandson received respectful responses from him. Then Lord Manu and the great sages went back to their respective homes.
Yakshas, actually many verses it comes like Yakshas are called as Punyajana, pious men. Was it mentioned demon somewhere? In fact, many verses it mentioned Punyajana, pious men. One of the Yakshas definitely acted wrongly, but in general the Yakshas are Punyajana. Yeah, there are tribes in Himalaya. Tibetan, I think.
Based on their instruction, he followed that and he saw that that led to multiple killings. Now there he was obedient to his superiors. How do we understand that the intervention must have happened much earlier? If say Swami Brahmana has come to that point, so he doesn't have to use this Digatra to kill multiple yakshas and the whole thing. In one sense, Dhruva Maharaj is following instructions of his superior. So how do we understand that action where he did follow and it was a duty, he went and challenged and the yakshas started fighting. The Kshatriya spirit, he fought that. And it went to a stage where his life is threatened, so he has to use his astra. It is well justified. But the angle which was taken is the anger has gone too much. But when we look at it from a protecting my own self, like I'm in danger, I'm using an astra to...
That point is definitely right. Because if you see from the another point of view, Dhruva Maharaj was one person, and I think the number of yakshas 130,000, no? Yeah. So many yakshas were actually fighting against one person, and they were, each of them were shooting from six arrows. That point of view, there is some fault in the point of yakshas also. So the, I think the sages inspired him to use that astra for self-protection. But it seems at a certain point we just stopped that because we're going beyond the limit. Especially, like I remember, with the nature of, when you're in the material world, sometimes when a person is playing different roles, like or in the case of a Kshatriya, we have to use passion as a tool. But many times, the passion is such that it can actually completely carry away a person. But once a person has surrendered to the Lord, the advantage is that the Lord will always try to protect that person by sending through some devotees, by giving some signals, by giving some guidance through some devotees. So Dhruva Maharaj was carried away by the anger, but then because he was surrendered to the Lord, Lord actually sent him representative, and his greatness is that he listened to them and he gave up the enmity.
you are mentioning that can't be given up by only false ego, can be given up only by surrender.
It can't be given up simply by knowledge. A false ego cannot be given up simply by knowledge, but only by surrender.
But the main hindrance of surrender itself is false ego, like it goes like a cycle. No? I can't surrender because I have false ego, but only give up false ego, I have to surrender. So how do we break the cycle?
Yeah, knowledge tells us to knowledge gives the right understanding, but then we have to apply that understanding in order to get the benefits of knowledge. So, so we have the free will either to listen to the false ego or we have the surrender. We have the choice. The soul is actually even above than the false ego. He is the higher nature of the soul. Not used to false ego. So, we'll start the next chapter. Shiva is connected to Sudhara. So that means Swayambhu Muni is facing upon, they also fall in this, they have to join this fight. They will. No, he is not saying that they have joined the fight because you have killed the Yakshas who are actually related to Kuvera and Shiva. In one sense, your action has become offensive to them who are all great devotees. Therefore, you must immediately go and actually, you must immediately stop it and then you must pacify Kuvera.
So, in connection with that, like, here is mentioned like Kuvera is the brother of Shiva. But then, one of Ravana molested one of the wife of Kuvera. So, that time, the Shiva didn't react up on that.
I know the story, Ravana molested different people, Kuvera. But Lord Shiva is definitely wrong activity. Is it mentioned Lord Shiva did not react to something?
There is no
information about that. No, that doesn't mean that he did not react. The scriptures are mentioning what we need to know.
I'm asking just because if you know that something about that,
I know the story. I heard the story that our Ravana
misunderstood. The truth is yesterday we heard becoming and using passion and becoming a tool of.
One thing comes to Hanumanji, one thing which I remember, that Amsterdam temple opening, like Prabhupada was becoming angry and calling them as rascals, devotees were actually committing so many mistakes, that the altar was made small, the duties were big. And he was he exhibited so much of anger, and then later Prabhupada came to the room, like the temple president, he came to meet Prabhupada, and he was like very much afraid what Prabhupada is going to say now. And Prabhupada was like completely, exactly opposite, he was completely cool. And he never expected, but usually when a person exhibits so much of anger, that mood of anger, in order for that to subside, it takes some time actually. It takes some time for that anger to subside. We usually exhibit that anger to somebody else also, and then somebody else also. But then immediately the devotee could see that the Prabhupada was like completely calm. A few instances later he was like completely peaceful and remained in that fashion. But this shows that the Prabhupada was using anger as a tool in order to correct the devotee. But he did not summon the influence of anger. Anybody else remember? Hanuman Ji is using anger as a tool. Yamunacharya's guru.
He is one person, like the disciple of Bolangal. Just after the Bhastacharya, that time Yamunacharya is just 5 years old. He became so angry and he challenged at
Bolangal.
That time he challenged and he defeated Bolangal.
And people feeling it everywhere. Mm. That is how we understand whether we want the tool or whether one is using it. Mm. And we should not have traces of it even in future. Keep on recalling again.
Yeah.
Okay. Go to the next chapter. अतुष्यमन्यं भगवान् धनेश्वर तत्रागतश्चारणयस्य किन्नरैः तं स्तूयमानो न्यवदत् कृताञ्जलिम्
The Great Sage Maitreya, and your Vidura, Dhruva Maharaj's anger subsided and he completely ceased killing your pet. From Sudhara, the most blessed master of the treasury, learned this news. He appeared before Dhruva, while being worshipped by Yakshas, Kinnara and Charanas. He spoke to Dhruva Maharaj, who stood before him with folded hands.
While following the instructions of Swayambhu Manu, Kuvera became very pleased and he appeared before Dhruva Maharaj. Now, Kuvera speaks to Dhruva Maharaj from the second verse till the seventh verse. Sixth verse that was spoken by Kuvera. ಜನದ ಉಚ ಭೋ ಕ್ಷತ್ರಿಯ ದಯಾದ ಪರಿತುಷ್ಟೋಸ್ಮಿ ತೇನ ಯತ್ವಂ ಪಿತಾ ಮಹಾದೇಶಾತ್ ವೈರಂ ದುಷ್ಟ್ಯಜ ಮತ್ಯಜ
ಮಾಸ್ಟರ್ ಪ್ರೆಸಿಡೆಂಟ್ ಕುವೇರ ಸೇಡ್ ಸೊ ಸಿಂಗ್ಲೀಸ್ ಜನ ಕ್ಷತ್ರಿಯ ಐ ಆಮ್ ವೆರಿ ಗ್ಲಾಡ್ ಟು ನೋ ದಟ್ ಅಂಡರ್ ದ ಇನ್ಸ್ಟ್ರಕ್ಷನ್ ಆಫ್ ಯುವರ್ ಗ್ರ್ಯಾಂಡ್ ಫಾದರ್ ಯು ಹ್ಯಾವ್ ಗಿವನ್ ಅಪ್ ಯುವರ್ ಎನ್ಮಿಟಿ ಆಲ್ದೋ ಇಟ್ ಇಸ್ ವೆರಿ ಡಿಫಿಕಲ್ಟ್ ಟು ಅವಾಯ್ಡ್ I am very pleased with you.
Okay. So here, Kuvera is addressing Dhruva Maharaj by the word Anaga, or sinless one. So Prabhupada writes in the next verse and the next purport, because Dhruva Maharaj might be thinking that I have committed a great sin. So Kuvera is so sensitive and he's trying to pacify Dhruva Maharaj by saying, no, you are a sinless person. You have not killed any yaksha. Nor did the yaksha has killed your brother. You are a sinless person, like that is sensitive way is trying to say sinless person. And he says, I am very pleased with you, Paritushtosmi, because you have given up the hatred which is very difficult to give up. Vairam Dushtyajam Asyaja. If you see, actually, if you introspect ourselves also, many times somebody is speaking some harsh words, acting in a particular way. So at the back of our mind, many times some kind of revenge or some kind of anger towards other person, those thoughts keep coming again and again. It's like this hatred is like very difficult to give up. Vairam Dushyajam. And you are given up this hatred on the instruction of your grandfather, Yatvam Pitamaha Adeshat. Pitamaha Adeshat. So then he says, Na Bhavan Avadit Yakshan Nayaksha Brataram Tava Kalayevasi Bhutanam Prabhur Apyaya Bhavayo.
Please, you have not killed the yakshas, nor have they killed your brother. For the ultimate cause of generation and annihilation is the eternal time teachers of the Supreme Lord.
So, he says that, actually, don't worry, you have not killed the yakshas. Also, he is saying that, don't feel that you are sinful, you are sinless. You did not kill the yakshas, nor did they kill your brother. Who is the cause? Kala Evasi Bhutanam. Time is the master of destruction and creation for all beings. Prabhur Avyaya Apyaya Bhavayu. Next verse.
Adamtam Ityapartadir Adhyanat Purushasyasi Swapni Vabhat Atadhyanat Yaya Bandha Viparyayau.
This identification of oneself and others as I and you on the basis of the bodily concept of life is a product of ignorance. This bodily concept is the cause of repeated birth and death, and it makes us go on continuously in material existence.
So here he mentions the absorption in the bodily conception, so that is the cause of thinking to be I and mine. And the result of bodily conception is Bandha and Viparyayav. Bondage and suffering. Adam Tvam is Apartati Ajnanat Purushasyasi. Ajnanat, from ignorance or from absorption in the body, man's intelligence thinking of I and mind like a dreamer. Swapni Iva Abhati Atadhyanat. And by which Bandha and Viparyaya, bondage and suffering arise. And this absorption in the body is actually leads to actually useless result. So Prabhupada in the purport, so he says that when a person realizes his relation with the Supreme Lord, then the result of realizing the Supreme Lord is that there will be no more differentiation of enemy and friend. And I give the example of that, just like when you understand that, when the hand understands the relation with the stomach, then there will not be any distinction between the hand and the leg, because everything is engaged in serving the stomach. The hand is the hand and the leg is the leg, but when both of them engage in the service of the whole body, there is no such distinction as hands and legs, because all of them belong to the same body. And another point that Prabhupada writes is that, and we cannot also not differentiate between the service of the hand may be superior to the service of the leg. We cannot differentiate that also. In that sense, like sometimes we may think, this service is superior, this service is inferior. Now, actually, any service is supreme, Lord, is on a spiritual platform. Anything spiritual cannot be compared with something else spiritual. From tattva point of view, we cannot actually compare one service with another service. Like Prabhupada writes in the Nectar of Devotion, there is no difference between Srimati Radharani and the grass, and the cows in Vrindavan. So Prabhupada, through this analogy, is making two points. One point is that you cannot differentiate between one living entity and another living entity. And another point he makes is that you cannot differentiate between one service and another service. Just like you cannot compare infinity with another infinity. So one is greater, one is less than two. But 1/0 cannot be, you cannot say it is less than 2/0. Nonsense. Both are actually infinite. But similarly, one service cannot be compared with another service. Since the Lord is absolute, the services are also absolute. Even though the hand is working one way and the leg is working in another way, since the purpose of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are all one. And then he mentioned that when we say they are all one, this is not to be confused with the Mayavadi philosophers by saying that, who say that everything is one. Next verse. Tadgacchadruva bhadram te bhagavantam adokshajam sarvabhutatma bhavena sarvabhutatma vigraham.
My dear Dhruva, come forward. May the Lord always grace you with good fortune. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is beyond our sensory perception, is the super soul of all living entities, and thus all entities are one without distinction. Begin, therefore, to render service unto the transcendental form of the Lord, who is the ultimate shelter of all living entities.
So, we see here that Dhruva Maharaj followed the instructions of Swayambhu Manu. So by following that, he is meeting a higher authority, Kuvera. And then, now, by pleasing Kuvera, Kuvera is blessing that may get the blessings of the Supreme Lord. So he is getting the Tadgacca Dhruva Bhadram te. May all good fortune unto you. And he is saying that you must actually worship the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul Spirit in the hearts of everyone. And who is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. So Prabhupada here comments in this purport on this word Sarva Bhutatma Vigraham. It's like Lord has a specific form that Mayavad philosophy says that absolute truth is formless. That is being refuted here because the word used is Vigraham. And another point which Prabhupada says is that by rendering service to the Lord, include service to all other parts, just like watering the root. Next verse. Bhajasva bhajaniyangrim abhavaya bhavachidam yuktam virasitam shaktya gunamayatma mayaya.
Indeed, yourself to me, therefore in the devotional service of the Lord, for only He can deliver us from this entanglement of materialistic existence. Although the Lord is attached to His material potency, He is aloof from her activities. Everything in this material world is happening by the inconceivable potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So Prabhupada, again in this purpose, he says that this verse again refutes the Mayavad philosophy. Because the word uses bhajasva. Like worship the Supreme Lord or engage in devotional service to the Lord. So that means whenever we say engage in devotional service, there is a conception of service, servant and the served. The served is the Supreme Lord, service is the devotional service and servant is the devotee. So we cannot say that everything is one. And then another thing which Prabhupada writes is that he comments on this word yuktam and girahitam. Yuktam means the Lord is attached, at the same time he is aloof. He is aloof from the actions of the material energy, but at the same time to the devotees, the Lord is personally present even in the material energy. When the Lord is aloof from this, but when the devotee engages in devotional service, he becomes attached to his devotional service. So this situation is called yuktam. This is another point of Prabhupada. Next verse. So finally, Kuvera is asking Dhruva Maharaj to ask for some benediction. Prinihi kamam drupayan manogatam mattasvamautanapade vishankita varam vararhom bhujanada padayor anantaram tvamvayamanga sushuma.
My dear Dhruva Maharaj, son of Maharaj Uttanapad, we have heard that you are constantly engaged in transcendental loving service to Supreme Person of Godhead, who is known for his lotus navel. You are therefore worthy to take all benedictions from us. Please therefore ask without hesitation whatever benediction you want from me.
So Dhruva Kuvera is saying, we have heard that you are always engaged in devotional service to the Lord. So therefore you are worthy of taking all benedictions. Varam vararho. And whatever you want, vrinihi kamam drupayan manogatam, whatever you may wish in your mind, please ask for the benediction. Avishankita means please ask for a benediction without any reservation. So here, just like suppose in a college, say IIT or something, somebody is a gold medalist, then he need not have to, different companies will be waiting to actually take him to a particular job. When somebody is having very high performance, then he has to choose the company. It's not that he has to struggle to get a job. The companies are waiting to actually give a job. Similarly, when a person is a pure devotee of the Lord, then the demigods are waiting to offer obeisance, waiting to actually serve him in different ways by giving different benedictions. The Prabhupada actually quotes that verse of Bilvamangal Thakur, how the Mukti Devi is actually waiting at the doorsteps of a devotee in order to serve the devotee. So therefore, a devotee is in the most exalted position. So just like a similar pastime, I think Vrindavan, Punjab National Bank had opened a branch or something. And they had actually invited Prabhupada. And just like Kuvera offered this proposal, like, you please ask any benediction you want. They also gave some proposal to Prabhupada. I remember the exact words. But Prabhupada, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he did not ask for anything material. Dhruva Maharaj just asked for unflinching remembrance of the Lord. Prabhupada also told them that you are all representatives of Kuvera. You please bless us that we may be able to please the Lord, we may be able to engage in devotional service to the Lord. Prabhupada did not ask for anything material here. There is a very similar pattern, just like this interaction between Kuvera and Dhruva Maharaj. There is also typical interaction between Prabhupada and the representatives of Punjab National Bank. Maybe somebody can find out where exactly the pastime is there, but I heard this pastime. Maitreya uvacha sarajarajena varaya chodito dhruvo mahabhagavato mahamati harau savavre chalitam smritim yaya taratya yatnena duratya
yantamaha. The priest says, Maitreya continues, my dear Vidura, when must I ask to accept a benediction from Kuvera, the Yaksha Raja? Dhruva Maharaj that most elevated pure devotee, who was an intelligent and thoughtful king, begged that he might have unthinking faith in and remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For thus, a person can cross over the ocean of nations very easily, although it is very difficult for others to cross.
So Kuvera is called as Raja Raja, king of all kings. So Prabhupada explains that unless somebody is blessed by Kuvera, one cannot become the king. So therefore Kuvera is the king of all kings. And Kuvera offered this proposal. Dhruva Maharaj is a Mahabhagavata and Mahamati, the topmost devotee and a highly intellectual. So usually we think an intellectual person, we understand in terms of somebody who can analyze different things, who is able to discriminate, analyze different things. And we many times people think a devotee means somebody who is like sentimental, who is more overwhelmed with the different feelings. But here, Dhruva Maharaj is called a highly intellectual devotee. And also Prabhupada explains he is a highly thoughtful person. So why he is called as highly intelligent and highly thoughtful? Because he did not ask for anything material. He just asked for, Prabhupada says, he did not even ask for transfer to the spiritual world. Dhruva Maharaj is asking, as long as I am there in the material world, I may have unflinching remembrance of the Lord. Because he asked for such a benediction, he is called as a highly intellectual and a highly thoughtful devotee. Highly thoughtful person. So, that means, as I mentioned, thoughtful or intellectual person is like one who is able to discriminate, one who is able to analyze. But the height of all the analysis and height of all the discrimination is that to understand what is favorable for my devotional service and what is unfavorable for my devotional service. In one class, Radhanath Sai Maharaj explained that simply giving some big lectures is not something great. He said that real knowledge, simply having knowledge or simply giving some lectures, that does not make a person knowledgeable or that does not make a person highly intelligent. What is actually real knowledge is that the ability to discriminate between what is favorable for one's devotional service and what is unfavorable for one's devotional service. So that discrimination or analysis, like what is actually favorable, so that makes a person intelligent or thoughtful. So Dhruva Maharaj, because he asked for nothing material, he just asked for unflinching remembrance of the Lord, therefore he is called Mahamati, the highly intellectual or highly thoughtful devotee. And Prabhupada, in the first part of the purport, he quotes this Prabodhananda Saraswati's verse, Kaivalyam Narakayate, Tridakshapur Akasha Pushpayate, Durgantendriya Kala Sarpa Patali, Protkata Damshayate, Vishwam Purna Sukayate, Vidhi Mahendra Adishya Pitayate, Yat Karunya Katakya Vaibhavavatam, Tamevam Gaurastamaha. The person who has received the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to such a person, liberation appears like a hellish condition, and heavenly pleasures appears like a phantasmagoria. And the mystic, the Durgantendriya Kala Sarpapatali, Krodhkata Damshayate. The yogis are trying to control their senses. But actually, for a devotee, when you engage in a devotional service of the Lord, the senses are like the venomous serpent. But because he is engaging the senses in the service of the Lord, they are like the serpent whose poisonous teeth are broken. And the whole world becomes a happy place, Vishwam Purna Sukhayate. So he is quoting this verse to show that why Dhruva Maharaj did not ask for even transference to the spiritual world. He did not even ask for the personal liberation, he did not ask for anything material, because he was actually and possession of a loud, the platform of loud towards the Supreme Lord. So therefore, I did not ask for anything. So now, next verse describes how Dhruva Maharaj returned to the capital city. Tasya prutena manasa tamdatva idavidastataha pasyato antardadesopi sapuram pratyapadyata.
The son of Idavida, Lord Kuvera, was very pleased and happily he gave Dhruva Maharaj the benediction he wanted. Thereafter he disappeared from Dhruva's presence and Dhruva Maharaj returned to his capital city.
So you see, Dhruva Maharaj, he did not refuse to ask benediction from Kuvera. So Prabhupada highlights that point and he says that because and Dhruva Maharaj was respectful to Kuvera because Kuvera in a heartfelt manner he was offering some benediction and Dhruva Maharaj did not say, oh, you are a demigod, so I don't want to take any benediction. No. He was respectful to Kuvera and he asked for unflinching remembrance. Prabhupada gives an example, just like gopis also worship the Katyayini Devi and they pray to Katyayini Devi just to get Krishna as their husband. So Krishna Chakotakur in that purport is another point that actually the Katyayini Devi is the spiritual energy of the Lord from another point of view. Yes, and another thing which Prabhupada says is that so basically if you see Dhruva Maharaj asked for unflinching remembrance, there is a beautiful verse I think Vishnu Puran. Na hani sen mahat shidram sa moho sacha vibramaha yan muhurtam kshanam vapi vasudevam na chintaye. The greatest loss is that the loss of a moment in forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord, and that is the greatest illusion. Sa moho sacha vibramaha na hanishyan mahasyana, and that is the greatest fault. That means the forgetfulness of the Supreme Lord, the greatest fault and the greatest loss and the greatest illusion. Yan muhurtam kshanam vapi vasudevam na chintayet. Even one moment in forgetfulness of the Lord. Next verse. Ata yajata yajyesham kratubir bhuri dakshinai dravya kriya devatanam karma karma phalapradam.
As long as he remained at home, Dhruva Maharaj performed many great ceremonial sacrifices in order to please the enjoyer of all sacrifices, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prescribed ceremonial sacrifices are especially meant to please Lord Vishnu, who is the objective of all such sacrifices and who awards the resultant benedictions.
So here, Prabhupada gives a long purport. This was explained how Dhruva Maharaj performed great sacrifices to please the Supreme Lord. And he gave so much of charity. So, Prabhupada talks about the duties of a Kshatriya and Vaishya. Especially for Kshatriyas and Vaishya, they are advised to perform lot of sacrifices and they are advised to give lot of charity. For Kshatriya, sometimes they may have to act sinfully in the form of they may have to commit some violence in order to maintain law and order. So therefore, Kshatriyas are allowed, they are told to actually perform great sacrifices and give lot of charity. And Prabhupada writes that Dhruva Maharaj practically emptied his treasury by giving charity. Practically emptied his treasury. And another thing, Prabhupada quotes this verse, Yajyadana tapakarma natyajyam karyam evatat yajyodana tapasyaiva pavanani manishina. The 18th chapter Krishna says that even manishinam, one should never give up yajna, dana, tapa and karma because they purify even great souls. Pavanani manishinam. This is like brahmacharis are supposed to perform sacrifices and Kshatriyas are supposed to perform charity and Sannyasis are supposed to perform austerity. So this way they should never be given up. And then he explains that in Kali Yuga the best sacrifice is that the sacrifice of Sankirtan, in which there is no there is no expense involved. And then he emphasizes that one should perform Sankirtan Yajna and distribute prasadam as much as possible. And even to perform these two things, one needs the cooperation of the government. One needs the cooperation of the government. And then he also explains that in the modern world, the government charges so many taxes, sometimes 70 to 80% of the salary goes in paying the taxes. One devotee, I think, Sampanda, you have Bhagavatam class, you were talking about the different names of the taxes. 20-25 dinars. But practically so many taxes are there, but previously they would collect the taxes, the tax money would be spent for performing sacrifices. But now it is spent for the increasing the salary of the officials, as what Prabhupada writes here. And then finally Prabhupada writes, Dhruva Maharaj, because in these sacrifices one has to worship different demigods. So why Dhruva Maharaj performed these sacrifices? Because Dhruva Maharaj as a king, he has to set example for the people, so therefore he performed many sacrifices and gave all his wealth in charity. But as long as he lived as a householder, he never spent a farthing for his sense gratification. So because these sacrifices in one sense, they are in the Karmakanda platform. But Dhruva Maharaj, although he is a pure devotee, he performed these sacrifices in order to set example for the people. Lastly, Prabhupada comments on this word. In the last paragraph, he talks about karma phalapradam. Karma phalapradam means the Lord awards everyone different kinds of karma as the individual living entities desire. He is a super soul present within the heart of everyone, and he is so kind and liberal that he gives everyone full facilities to perform whatever acts one wants. If anyone wants to enjoy or laud it over material nature, the Lord gives him full facilities, but he becomes entangled in the resultant reaction. Just this last point, Vishnu Chakra Thakur, he mentions in regards to these two lands, Dravya Kriya Devatanam Karma Phalapradam. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur says that these two words mean the Lord alone creates the activities related to the ingredients, Dravya, Kriya, rituals, and Devatas. And not only that, he alone creates the results of the activities, karma phalapradam. Dravya, Kriya, Devatana, karma phalapradam. That means the Lord only creates the Dravya, rituals, the demigods, the controlling deities, and also the results of the activities. So we'll continue from the 11th verse, and tomorrow we'll try to complete this chapter. Anantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki Shri Prabhupada ki Gaura Pustaka. Thank you.